You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On the West Coast. Joining me is a fan favorite, Mike Musselman. Happy Thanksgiving, man. How are you?
It's not Thanksgiving yet.
It's going to be. Are you still? You're not celebrating the white man's holiday, are you?
No, when they bamboozled the Indian.
We were making peace.
The history that you read, they did it together.
Yes.
Yeah, with a gun to your head.
You've never done anything together with a gun in your head, to your head. Hey, I wondered if you could explain. So I want you to explain something for before we talk about other things. Before we talk about your prison island that you've got going on. Can you explain how a vehicle gets checked out to everybody? There was a Marine who had the blood alcohol limit in Japan and on bases in Japan is 0.03. In the United States, it's 0.08. They say that this Marine, 21 years old, had a blood alcohol content more than three times. So let's just say it's between 0.09 and 0.12.
Right.
He ran a red
light.
Was
it a government vehicle?
Yeah, a government vehicle, a two-ton government vehicle. What is that?
Big pickup truck.
And
a big van or something.
He runs a red light and he hits a Japanese small truck and it kills the 61-year-old driver. So everybody there is.
What's the big problem, Mac?
He was drunk. And
in the discussion, you have been talking to me for what, the last minute and a half?
Yeah.
Two people have lost their lives in the United States due to drunk driving.
What's that?
And why aren't they on the paper?
Oh no!
Two people have lost their lives.
Can you explain? So it happens at 5:25 in the morning in Naha. This guy probably went out and was pretty drunk the night before. And then he was supposed to drive the following morning. What's the process? Does he just go get in a vehicle and drive it from the motor pool?
Well, you're asking me?
Yeah.
The process for me is I walk up and go, hey, give me a truck.
And who do you say that to? There's a dispatcher. The dispatcher, what rank is the dispatcher?
Well, I don't talk to the dispatcher. I probably talk to, like, the Denny or something in the room. I need a truck.
I thought you had better situational awareness of.
And I don't normally do things in the last minute. And I couldn't drive myself, so because that was a policy that officers can't drive; they have to have enlisted chauffeurs.
All right, so you're worthless to me.
You didn't know that.
Well, I know that officers can't drive. I just thought you had you might have a better working understanding of how the dispatching process works. Trip tickets and all that kind of stuff.
No, I have. That's all magic to me, man. Voodoo. Like I said, I never drove because I was told I can't drive as an officer, even though I had three times as long the experience of driving than the kids that usually drove me around.
And they're just clueless. Clueless with a clipboard.
Yeah. We had a couple good drivers, but for the most part, they were just whatever.
No, they're just young kids, though. The young kids, doing their thing. All right, a couple stories in the news.
Ugh. You're just destined to try and ruin my day.
No, we're going to talk about the Daughters of the American Revolution in a minute, but
I'm getting fired up about that. More I'm thinking about it.
Okay, tell everybody about your speech, and then I'll tell you about mine.
Oh no, let's do yours. Your birthday ball one.
First of all, I just want to.
Hey, wait, wait.
Yes.
Cliff Notes. Don't need. Don't set the atmosphere. Don't have to set the atmosphere. Don't have to tell me how like overjoyed everybody was there to have there. Just skip all that. The content of your speech, not your entire speech. I don't want to hear it again. What's your content? Just Cliff Notes of what you're trying to get across, the point you made, and how it was received. That's it.
Okay. I have to tell you. I have to make a statement before I do that.
No, you're going to try and set the stage.
No, I'm not. Yeah, well, man. Just a little bit.
You should have been in you should have been in cinema or drama or something. Let me set the stage for you, please.
Oh my God!
Storyteller.
Would you shut up? You're going.
Northeast breeze. The smell.
No. When you, I've asked you about doing battlefield circulation when you showed up someplace, and you got out of the trucks. How long does it take you to figure out if they're a good unit or a bad unit? And your response is
minutes, like a couple minutes.
Okay. VMM 164 is a really good unit. And I asked them guys later and they said, no, this is a really good unit. But you could just tell, you know, people are happy. They greet you, you know, the way they look in uniform.
It's a ball.
I know, but Mike, okay, units that hate each other still have balls.
Did you go do a toolbox inspection?
What's that?
Did you go do a toolbox inspection in the flight line?
No, I didn't. No, of course I didn't.
No. Did you do a white-handed glove inspection of the cockpit?
No,
but
here's the other question. If I told you that the majority of people stayed and hung out in the ballroom after the ceremony, after dinner, when the music started, what would you say to that? You would
Where
say,
were you?
You would say,
No.
At a casino. At a casino.
An Indian casino?
Yes.
No one likes Indian casinos, by the way.
Okay.
Who loves to play?
Anyway. All right, never mind. No.
Red Jack is, you get two cards and you're trying to get to 22. Like, oh, okay, gosh, you guys are very creative.
All right. This is not what I anticipated. I made one, what makes the Marine Corps special? Answer, you do. Why is Keep Your Honor Clean important? Because you have to live with your shit for the rest of your life. And three, don't be afraid to fight for the Marine Corps. Don't be afraid to fight for what's right. And if that means you have to fist fight, then fist fight. And then I played.
Wait, no one's looking. Yeah.
No, and then I played audio from the commandant that said, "Hey, look, you're going to tell me to do the wrong thing, and I'm not going
to
do it."
Oh, you had to bring in Neller?
Yeah. So I played audio.
Is your closer?
I played Neller saying, "You want to fight? Let's. You want to fight? Let's. Let's fight."
You should have plagiarized the shit out of his speech and called it your own.
So I said. I don't think you need any other guidance than the Commandant of the Marine Corps. If people want you to do stupid stuff, just look at them and say, "You want to fight? Let's fight." The Marine
Corps.
Did
you bring my name up in any way?
No. The Marine Corps would be a better place with more fighting.
You would have scored mega bonus points had you said my name somewhere in this.
No, I didn't want a name. I didn't want a name drop. I didn't want to be that guy. Okay, now.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the best part of the speech though.
The end. Which I'm hoping for is right now.
No, it wasn't the end. It was at the start. I say, are there any Vietnam? Are there any Vietnam?
Okay, you got me riveted on the edge of my seat, Matt. Keep going.
And there's one guy in the back who puts his hand up, and I said, "Would you stand up?" And he stands up. And I just did the standard.
His name was Luke McConnell.
No, Vietnam vet, you dope. So I said, he's standing there in a suit, white hair. And I just, you know, the typical, on behalf of everybody who serves today, thank you for what you went through. You know, we can come to places like
this.
Did you
put him there as a plant?
No.
That's pretty good if you did.
No, I didn't. Totally impromptu. And then.
That'd be an even better story.
And then, they give the guy a standing ovation, which is awesome.
Yeah.
He came up after the whole thing to me and found me and said,
"It gave me $50 in Indian coupons.
This is one of the greatest nights of my life. Thank you." I said, "Nah, don't thank me, man. Thank you." So it was very cool. Very cool. And then
apparently this guy leads a very boring life. That's what story I got.
Maybe,
get out of this one.
Maybe. And then Patrick was there. So it was good. So that was my speech. So tell me about the Daughters of the American Revolution.
I don't know if I can top that magnificent episode of.
Oh, well, you're going to, and I'm going to interrupt. I'm going to interrupt you, and I'm going to dog your shit every step of the way. So go ahead.
I wish I'd have been there for that pontification.
Go ahead.
I'm a pontificator.
Go ahead, jackass.
come on. I'm just having fun with you.
No, I know. I know you were.
Can we laugh as friends?
No, we can, and now we're going to laugh some more. So go ahead.
No, we're done laughing.
No, we're not. We're going to laugh.
Yeah.
Laughter's good. No. Laughter's good for the soul.
No, we're done. We're done laughing.
Okay. All right. So let's go. Daughters of the American Revolution.
Yeah, I talked about sacrifice.
Oh, really? Were you pontificating?
It's not as funny now when you're trying to do it.
It's not? Okay.
Everybody knows.
Okay, keep going. Keep going.
No, because you get interrupted again. I told you, it's not funny anymore. Now, Mac, it's just kind of embarrassing. You need to knock this off. I'm starting to feel embarrassed for you, man. Okay? I'm waiting for the email to come in. It says, "Mac, Mike's right. Gunner's right, Mac."
Okay, look. Nobody has either texted that or emailed me that. Okay? So just keep going with your story.
Okay. Well, this is now funny because, like, everything I'm going to say, you're going to go, but, no, we talked about, like I said, just sacrifice, you know? Why, the whole thing. And, you know, it kind of alluded to a couple stories. One of them, you know, being, you know the story, Chris Alsberger.
Right.
From 3-5, you know, was awarded the Navy Cross. For his actions on the Marine Corps birthday of all time, and then ultimately lost his life on December 9th in the Joel Arm District. So,
and that was in
kind of gave him a real quick background.
And that was in 2004.
You would have been 33, brother.
Me?
No, he would have been 33.
This birthday.
His birthday is in November. Wow. Kind of crazy. He would have been 33 years old. He had just turned 20, been with the unit, you know, under a year. Kind of crazy. And then, you know, they named a hall after him in Quantico.
Well, tell everybody the story about what he did, just so they know.
Chris was in a four-man fire team with a Navy corpsman being one of the four. That's how bad we were, you know, everybody's hurting. 3-5 in Fallujah, in the second battle of Fallujah, on November 10th, they'd enter a courtyard, and the point man was instantly killed by machine gun fire. The number two man and the corpsman were wounded, and Chris actually, you know, engaged the enemy and then took care of his comrades, got him to the second story of a building, climbed, you know, brought him up there to get him out of the fire, and then safeguarded their lives, and then ultimately their platoon finally came in, and he got out of there, and then he was wounded during that whole battle, and, you know, the kind of the bravery and just the resolve and the dedication. I mean, everything good, you know, that you can think of, Chris displayed it that day. And then went back in the fight, back into the push of the Joel Arm, and then ultimately, again, lost his life on December 9th, but was awarded the Navy Cross in April his family was. In April, when we got back to San Mateo, parade grounds, General Paxton, Commanding General at the time, came out and he delivered the speech of the award and everything else. It was a great day, you know, to see for his family, one, to see what Chris meant, and that he, you know, like we have always said, you know, Chris didn't die alone. I mean, he died in. He had died in company of his brothers, you know, just like everybody else that's gone before. You know, they go on. And so it led me to this, you know, sacrifice, what people are willing to do, lay down their lives for a belief, for a cause, for somebody else. You know, and for instance, like we talk about the Daughters of American Revolution, think of our forefathers, the guys that wrote up, started writing on a piece of paper that would have ultimately cost them their lives had they been caught. You know, they were deemed traitorous by the crown and be shot on sight. These people are willing to sacrifice everything for a belief. And so my argument with you was, we were kind of talking about it, was, aren't these organizations popular with our youth today? What the hell is going on with our youth? Like, the younger generations. The VFW, the, again, Daughters of American Revolution. Here's a great organization that, you know, does great things for the community, scholarship programs, schools, you name it. And, you know, what, and I asked you, what organization have you ever been to where they, in the beginning, after they do Pledge of Allegiance or anything else, they read, you know, the first preamble of the United, of the Constitution? So, to understand the Constitution and the importance of it and why it was written and how it was written and all the things that went into it, you know, it's an amazing thing. But why? Why is it not?
Well,
why isn't that important?
I'll answer your question with a question. Why is the Marine Corps League not popular with young Marines when they get out?
A lot of reasons. One, go ahead.
Do you know anybody? Any of your peers that is active in a Marine Corps League detachment?
No, I don't know, but I'm okay. Sure there is.
Yeah, no, but my point is you don't know anybody. I mean, it's not like, you know, so-and-so's talked to you about, you know, his, you know, the cool things they're doing. Now, I know they're doing cool things. The problem, and they know the problem that the Marine Corps League knows they have it, is they're looked at as these crazy World War II and Korean dudes that wear the red blazers and go marching around it at events, and it doesn't translate to young people. So it's I think it takes work to keep your organization young and vibrant and old
and relevant in today's day and age. Yeah.
Right, and you got to do that. And if you're not doing that, then you're going to die. Like the Combat Correspondents Association has this incredible lineage that goes back to World War II and all the different places they've gone to chronicle the combat history of the Marine Corps. And their numbers are slowly but surely dwindling to the point that their organization is going to go away. And it's sad, but you got to be, in my opinion, you have to be a social media, you know, warrior, and you got to get on there, and you got to sell what you're doing.
Okay, so let's look at
to younger people.
Let's look at Dar. You've talked to Dar.
Who? Okay, yeah.
You've talked to the Dar. I've talked to the Dar many occasions. I mean, they use social media. They're all over the place.
Okay, wait. So
why aren't they popular with the youth?
Why? So you talked about people that are willing to give their lives to their country and the sacrifices. What was your ultimate point that you made to them?
Was that? Well, my ultimate point, again, I just talked about sacrificing. How you don't have to sacrifice your life. But, you know, the sacrifices that these women make in Dar, or what that organization does for this country, is a good thing.
Okay. So you talked about sacrifice, yes? So that was your main point?
Yeah, at all ends of the spectrum, yeah. Okay. From the highest end, from the ultimate sacrifice down to...
Were they yawning and bouncing their foreheads off the table? Or no?
Oh, that was pretty low blow, man. You know, you've seen me talk.
What was that? Dorothy needs three stitches. She just hit her head on the table.
Oh, here we go. Opportunity for Mr. Funny Man to jump in.
Okay, so let's go back. So You tell me.
You know you're laughing alone.
You're laughing alone.
The world is laughing at you.
Not with you. Al Franken's been accused by by another woman. So again, your state covering itself in greatness.
Mac, don't do this, man.
What?
You know what you're doing.
Look, Mike.
You know what you're doing.
Look, just because you, like, change the tune of the parade doesn't mean the rest of us all have to buy it, okay? All right? You're from Minnesota. You own Minnesota, and that's the way it is. Okay, so let's go back to older organizations that do great things. And let me just tell you, when I talk to people about transitioning, the first thing I say is go find the guys in the Marine Corps League. A, they'll buy you a drink. B, if you want one. B, they know all the douchebags in the VA, in veteran service organizations, you know, all over the place. They'll give you the shortcuts.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. All those guys, they've been living in that community dealing with this stuff.
The American Legion, the VFW. All of those organizations.
Yeah, there's good reasons. There's tangible reasons to join them when you get there. Now, you may not want to stay in them, but when you get there, they can make your transition a lot easier by saying, oh, you're stupid. Don't go to that guy. Call this guy. Tell him you know me, and he'll take care of you. Oh, okay.
Right.
You know? So those organizations are, and then you get hooked by the good things they do, you know, going up, you know, and cleaning up some Korean War veteran's yard that needs it, or doing repairs on his house on a Saturday, all that kind of stuff. It's like you're hanging out with guys that are in your tribe. It's good. So then you get hooked. So why doesn't it appeal? I don't know. I do know. They go and they hand out their brochures at a table, and it's got to be something different, man. You got to find a different way to sell it to young people. I mean, your daughter's 19?
21.
Your daughter's 21 years old. So you got somebody young in the house. I mean, the things that appeal to who? To her, they don't appeal to your daughter. The eye roll,
they do.
That's really cool,
Dad.
They do.
No, they do.
they do.
Yeah. And everything I tell her that appeals to her.
Dad, you're the coolest person. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're hearing that all the time. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you have lunch, or was it a breakfast, or talk to me?
No, we did that. Yeah, it was like at 9, got there at 9:30, did it at 10, and then just left recently.
I spoke in Grand Forks. I met a woman who was at Pearl Harbor as a nurse.
Right.
And very cool.
Right.
Her name was Agnes Scherer, and she grew up in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And found her way. She knew that her parents would let her join the Navy to pursue a career in nursing, and the Navy would keep her safe as she went around the world, and that's what she wanted to do. She grew up going to the library and looking at pictures of different things around the world, and she wanted to see them, and she thought the best way to do it would be a nurse in the Navy. And she winds up at Pearl Harbor.
Cool.
Yeah, no, it's cool as hell. And you know what? One of the things it taught me is there's all these people in your community that you don't know about who've done great things and don't talk about it. And then you meet somebody and they say, oh, yeah, talk to Agnes Scherer. She was behind, as you look at the Arizona as it explodes, to the right side of the ship, a little bit around the bend, is the ship she was on, the USS Solis. It's like, what? She was there. These people in your community who've been a part of a great event. So pretty cool. Pretty cool.
No, that is cool.
But again, I mean, there's criteria though for getting in the Daughters, unlike a lot of them where you just have to be a veteran, service organizations. But Daughters of the American Revolution, you have to be able to trace your lineage back to somebody.
Back to the founding fathers.
Yeah, somebody who.
American Revolution.
Who fought in the revolution or, yeah. So it's not the easiest. It's not the easiest. But you can get on Ancestry.com and give it a shot if you were here then. I didn't get here till much later. Mike was here then, though. Mike's descendants were here. So
Of what?
Being a Native American, your descendants were already here.
Oh, yeah.
Mine didn't
come. Yeah, it was your people that came in. And
mine didn't come over till later.
Claimed my land.
Exactly. The
Yeah, like, wait a second. I thought we were here first. Be quiet, Indian. Yep. So go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you again. Huh?
I'm
am I losing you again?
No. I'm just reading. There's more investigations. Do you remember the investigation of an F-18 that was a nighttime flight a year ago, and the pilot ejected, and they found him dead in the Pacific Ocean off Okinawa? Nothing appeared to be wrong until Captain Frederick keyed the radio, but did not say anything, the investigation found. 2 seconds later, he yelled, ejecting. And then they found his body, blah, 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 blah. His injuries were consistent with hitting his head during the ejection, which would have rendered him unconscious. The investigation could not determine what caused Frederick to eject. Few other answers were in the report. All the investigating officers' opinions and recommendations were blacked out. So, no evidence indicated that Frederick was overly fatigued or anxious during or leading up to his final flight, according to the investigation. And there is no substantial reason to believe maintenance malpractice was a contributing factor, but there is no way to verify if Captain Frederick experienced any mechanical malfunction without salvage of the mishap airframe, which I guess is too deep to get to, given its location at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. So that's in the news today. Any thoughts?
No. Buck just said 2% doesn't make the Indian. And you're right, Buck. You're absolutely right. 2% doesn't make an Indian. And I'm 18%, Buck. If you knew math, that wouldn't be 2%.
It's
16%.
What
off.
Percent makes you Native American?
I think they go by 10 or 12%. So, I think that's what they kind of go by.
So that means you're in. Do you know what tribe you're a member
of? Yeah, if I choose that route, then if I want to go through that, yeah. But I don't need to do that. Well, I just do it for you guys, just to make fun with you guys.
What tribe are you a member of? Not a member of, a descendant.
Hopi.
Oh, really?
Hopi.
Hopi, yeah. Indians lived in caves on the sides of these canyons.
Mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. From Arizona, southwest part of the United States.
Yes.
Here, give me your thoughts on this. A new strategy in Afghanistan. U.S. targets Taliban drug labs.
New strategy. Every time I hear a new strategy in Afghanistan, I just, like, almost get sick to my stomach.
And there's a picture of...
You know how many new strategies we've tried?
Okay, let's talk about poppy eradication.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Okay, Mike, tell me about poppy eradication and driving the tractor over the guy's field who's paid his bribes, right? You knock the poppy down, but you don't crush the bulbs, and it comes back.
Yeah, well, that's the whole, Mac, that's the whole stupidity of, all right, we're going to go after the poppy. Okay, so let's... You know, here, I'm going to talk about being responsible. Let's bring in the U.S. Department of Agriculture and, let's do this responsibly and bring in the U.S. Department of Agriculture and have them come up with a plan, a solution. When we go to this farmer and say, okay, and so here's how stupid this got. You were there. You remember this. We started talking with the U.S. ag guys, and I said, okay, what can we give the farmer to subsidize, you know, basically, how can we want to prevent him from selling or growing poppy this season. So we're going to eradicate his field. We're going to plow him under. But then we're going to plant, let's pick a fruit, pomegranates. Well, pomegranates is about 4 years, 5 years before the fruit is actually ripe to pick, right. You know, to actually use. You have to go through five seasons. Or corn. It would take one whole season, you know. Okay, so let's do the math. We want this guy to stop growing poppy. He gets $100 for 1 acre's worth of crop if he grows poppy. And this guy's got 50 acres. So, you know. And now we wanted to convince him to stop doing this. We're going to tell him grow corn. He gets $1 an acre for corn. He gets $5 for pomegranate. Right?
Right.
Plus, with pomegranate or corn or anything else, which that's a lot of money still if he has the land and everything else in Afghanistan.
Right.
But the thing about poppy was he doesn't do shit. Poppy, the guys come to him and say, hey, we're going to grow poppy on your plant, and we're going to pay you. And you don't have to go out there. We'll cultivate it. We will grow it. We will do everything. We'll harvest it. We'll do everything. We're just going to pay you for using your land. Here you go. And, oh, by the way, you're getting a bonus because we can just kill you and take your land. But we decided to be nice today. We're going to pay you $100 a month. $100 a month, it's like 2 years allowance, you know. So now you go to the agriculture guys and go, how can we meet them somewhere and make it lucrative for him to, you know, to get off poppy. And you know what you get from the agriculture guys? The U.S. Ag. This is a guy from the U.S. Department of Agriculture from the United States who says, since when do we pay farmers for subsidizing and not growing crops?
What?
We do it in the United States every fucking year, idiot.
Hey, and stop using the F word in the third hour.
I know. I'm sorry. I just got a little excited. So, we pay American farmers. And his answer was, well, it's America. Oh, you're right. The only country that can actually make fuel out of food. You know, the rest of the world's starving, and we're making fuel out of food. So, these guys just never understood it, man. You're never going to win that war. Ever. Ever. You know, it was never going to happen. We didn't have enough people. How do you get people out of groups from stop growing poppy? You got to pay them.
Yeah. And you got to pay them for 5 years till the pomegranates mature.
And if you're not willing to pay them for the 5 years that they're not getting any crop, then they're going to go right back to poppy because they need to make a living, idiots. You know? And then you get there, well, you don't know what you're talking about. You're kind of out of your league here. We're talking about U.S. Department of Agriculture. No, I'm talking about common sense, idiot. And you're way out of your league. You're not even in the right ballpark.
Ooh.
So, yeah, they showed up at games at Fenway. Where are they? Dodger Stadium. Waiting for the home team to show up. Not going to happen, boys. Wrong stadium.
No, you know what? That's
that's Mike.
That's how you do it. You know, and you know, the question is, you know, well, you know, can we sustain the payments for 5 years for this? Pennies.
We've almost paid him $1 trillion so far.
Pennies on the dollars, bro. Pennies on the dollars, and then let him go.
We've almost paid the Afghani government $1 trillion. I mean, it's like I saw it somewhere. It's like $875 billion. You know what? $875 billion will buy you.
I mean,
just about anything you want?
Yeah. And, I mean, it would literally buy you anything you want.
And where is the majority of that money gone?
Oh, for these Afghani officials that own homes in states here in the United States or abroad.
Right.
You know, the Afghani former head of ministry, whatever, is now a multimillionaire and lives in France and has six homes. Well, how did he get all his money? The U.S. government.
Yeah, on being
no, no, I'm seriously. What do you mean?
Being on a civil...
No, I'm serious. Yeah, he's a billionaire because his $1 billion that he has in the bank was given to him in $20 bills from the United States. Taxpayer money. You created that billionaire.
Congratulations, yep. By the way.
And he's not just the only one.
No.
And, you know, we did in Iraq. I'll never forget talking to the head of, like, the Western Army of the Iraqi Army. He came out for an inspection during Al-Fajr. And we were talking to him, and, you know, and I asked him some hard questions. He spoke great English. He was educated in the West. I mean, he's like an Oxford grad. So we were talking, and I said, so what's in it for you? Why did you, you know, he was exiled. He left the country during Hussein. Comes back in, the educated guy. And then I said, well, what's in it for you? And he kind of, you know, well, you know, gave me this thing about how important it was to him. I said, well, if it would have been that important to you, you would have stayed. Not ran, but in living in exile. But I didn't say it to him. So I said, finally, we got out. We got to talking. Oh, guess what? This guy has, like, I think it was 50 or 40-some acres in Maryland and has a six-bedroom, 6,000-square-foot home being built. As we were talking in Iraq. He wasn't sticking around. He wasn't going to see you know, he had literally a golden parachute right by the door. So when things started getting more, you know, bad, man, he was going to punch. Where's that house? The payments for the house going to, you know, you paid cash for everything. Where did he get that money? U.S. taxpayers. Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty
disgusting.
It is pretty disgusting. When you go over there and you see it and you start looking around, because again, the solutions are, you know, Afghans never had an army and it's trying to be a nation. So you have to stand that up, and that takes years and years and years to do. You're on a bit of a fool's errand when you're trying to conduct military operations with immature military. I mean, they've never had a national military. And so that's what we've gone through. But the remedy to the poppy is not a difficult one. And Mike's just outlined it. You got to give them some, and look, they're farmers. You know, this whole Taliban.
Another
thing,
out. Give them another out.
Yeah. Yeah. This whole Taliban thing. Do you think they want that in their lives and all this? No, they just want to live in peace. So give me something comparable. I'm a farmer. And if it's pomegranate, then so be it. But you got to help me get there.
Well, to them,
if you want this other shit to go away.
To them, we always emphasize the word freedom. Wow, we're going to give you your freedom. Well, they don't understand that. Yeah. And you hit it right in the head right when you said that. They just want peace. They don't want to be left alone. They want to make a living, support a family, and live whatever life they live until the day they die. Practice whatever they want and just be left alone. They don't want a government. They don't want people telling them what to do. They don't want people telling them they have to use this much of their acreage or do that, or you can only have so much water, or, you know, they just want peace.
Right. Yeah. Could you?
It doesn't equate to them.
Yeah. Could you fix a canal? Right. Help me stand up the pomegranate and then leave. Could you do that?
I need a new yak. My one's got a busted up leg. That's it? You need a yak? Yeah, just a yak. There you go.
Here's a yak.
This yak's right from Nepal, too. It's a Nepalese yak, the best they are.
The finest yak in the world. And there are, hey, there are many yaks, but this one is mine.
Mm-hmm.
The,
but
yeah.
That's the whole point, Mac. When we change these strategies, we do these different things. I'm not a strategist. I'm the tip of that. I'm on the edge of that spear. I'm not the point, but I'm that cutting edge. You know?
But you've been around the strategist. You've been in an OPT or two. The thing is,
this is not
a new strategy. Okay, the whole reason that we went to Hellman in 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
And then in a big way in 2009, 10, 11, 12 was because this is the money machine of the Taliban. So if you're going to choke the Taliban,
right. You
choke them at the source of the money, which is.
But we didn't do that. We didn't do that either.
Poppy. Yeah. Now, the problem is, though.
We did during our time.
Yeah, but even then it was imperfect because poppy's the only thing that throws off enough money to bribe everybody to get everybody on one side. Okay? If you take poppy away, then the question is, okay, what replaces it so that all these people have enough money to get kickbacks, which is the way the system works, so that they're all on one side doing the same thing?
Yeah.
And so if you can't do that, and so what would happen is they have this eradication program, which if you grow poppy, we're going to destroy it, except if you pay the bribe. If you pay the bribe, we'll just drive the tractor through your field. The poppy, mm-hmm. Some of the poppy will get knocked down.
Oh, then, but the plow?
Then it'll stand
the plow
back
is going to be up, though.
Yeah. And so, but if you don't pay the bribe, then we're going to get all of our guys online, and they're going to have little sticks. And then they're going to go through, and they're going to whack the crap out of all your pods, which means the poppy gets blasted all over the field, and it's worthless. That's what happens if you don't pay your bribe.
But it's a strange, it's the same strategy. After watching that Vietnam series that it was on TV, same strategy that we tried with the South Vietnamese. And it didn't work. We gave them all this military equipment, billions of dollars in military equipment. What'd they do? They sold it on the black market. Lined their own pockets. Cheated their own soldiers out of ammunition and guns and munitions. Because they were selling it on the black market. And we knew it. And what'd we do? We still gave them more stuff. You know, we knew that 20% of a shipment pulling in to the harbor in Saigon, 20% of it automatically went up top to go into the black market. That was the way of business was. Because they had to make money. It was such a corrupt government and a corrupt regime. Generals were getting, 100 times more than what their pay was.
Okay.
You know, an Iraqi general.
Let me read you.
Was making the pay equivalency of our generals. And we were making up the cost.
Let me read you an interesting email. You two are way too worldly for the rest of us. You have seen stuff that most of us have just read about. We live in this democracy, and we think that our concepts can be exported, and we can appeal to people to do things for the right reasons.
Yeah.
However, when you live in a world where your physical security is the most important thing, and after that, it's your financial security, and you're willing to take bribes, and all of that is acceptable in your culture. How do we deal with this? Because let's just say we can get our hands around the issue in Afghanistan. Will we try this in Somalia? In Yemen?
Yes.
Will we have Marines and soldiers stationed all over the world as we try to fashion the world in our own vision so that they can be like Americans, so that when we do these things, they can honor what we do and they can do it the right way? And then here's the question. I think that's a fool's errand. us going around the world trying this. These people have their own cultures. I don't understand how this all ends. The downside is that Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and ISIS are going to these other places, so we feel we have to go too. How do you guys think this all works out?
It doesn't work out. That's the problem. In the philosophy that we have, it doesn't work out because America is looked upon as the wealthy relative. You're just waiting to die that you're hoping you're in the will. You know, that's all you have to do is appease that until it passes, and then you make out on the back end. You know, in the people that are in power, the people that are really suffering are the people. The people benefiting are the people in power.
Right. And as Mike said, look, when you live in this culture, you do it. For instance, the guys who worked for Saddam, I mean, they lived in fear that they would be part of a purge or something like that. And so when you had a chance to shake people down, and that was just part of doing business. You know, the military's here, you know you guys have to pay for it because we're protecting you. And out of that, you know, it was like, God, who described to me?
Well, bribes and kickbacks are even part of our politicians.
Explain.
I mean, our own Congress and Senate practice that.
Well, look at, yeah. That's
how does the politician, how does a senator become a senator and become a multimillionaire after two terms of being a senator?
Yeah, they don't get paid that much.
How does that happen? You know, they don't get paid that much. They make just under probably about $100,000, close to $200,000 a year. You know, shit, Roger Goodell, commissioner of the NFL, is going to make a $50 million contract here soon.
Senators make $174,000.
How do they become multimillionaires when they're done with their terms? How?
They save all their money for 5 years, 6 years. No? Nothing?
That still doesn't make you a millionaire.
Okay, let me do this. I don't have a home mortgage. I find some way not to pay that.
I don't pay for gas. I don't pay for food. I don't pay for utility bills. I don't pay for travel.
And then I get some other honorary job that provides me income.
I get some chairman of the board job that guarantees me $10 million and a severance pay when I get fired after the first year of another $10 million.
So maybe I could get it that way. And if my wife has a good job, then we're there. We're all set. You know, again, that's a good question. So do we have to keep doing this around the world? You know, and I guess, you know, in Africa, you know, is going to be the next place that we fight about this stuff in. Because it's seeping into, into all the cracks and crevices that aren't filled by a sovereign government. That's where these guys go, and so that's where we go in pursuit. And I would say this: if you don't want to see your country annihilated, you better get your act together. Because let me tell you what happens with this. What happens with this, and the United States' way of rectifying this is we're going to partner with somebody. And they're going to fight to retake places that these guys take. And if you want to see what they look like, look at pictures of Ramadi, Fallujah, Mosul, and Raqqa after a very slow, probably, I don't want to say amateurish because that's disrespectful, novice-level infantry organization tries to do urban combat, which means they're going to go slow and you're going to have to use supporting arms more than you would care to kill people, which means you're going to rubble the city. You're going to annihilate it. And that's what you'll be left with. And then you get to start over again at square one. So, I don't know. So, anyway.
What a plan.
What a plan. What else are you doing today?
That's about it.
That's it?
Yeah.
Right. Anything exciting going on in Texas?
There's always exciting things going on in Texas. Buck's listening.
Is he? What's he saying?
He's saying exactly, and people take it in the ass.
I saw an interesting, and I put it up on the Almarin Radio podcast page, but it's not a podcast. It's a it's an actual article. One of the op-ed writers in the New York Times wrote an article over the weekend that says that has the following headline, opinion. What if Ken Starr was right? Revisiting the 1990s and realizing that impeachment was reasonable. So in with the backdrop, guys who wrote it, his name is Ross Douthat. And he goes through and he talks about Bill Clinton's conduct and that the Republicans were thought as being, you know, reactionary, intolerant, and the nation shouldn't be punished simply for Bill Clinton's indiscretions. What happens if the Republicans were right that perjury and exploiting women, exploiting state troopers who brought women to Governor Clinton and then President Clinton, and then were offered lifetime federal jobs in exchange for their silence? What happens if that was absolutely true and the appropriate thing? So pretty interesting article, I would, because, you know, it's again, one of the things I really like is when I see, when people kind of grow up, when they look at things from a balanced perspective and say, you know, that's not unreasonable. And it's not just right. This party hack. It doesn't matter what our side does. It only matters what your side does. We need to get beyond that. So anyway, but it's an interesting read and it's on, the Almarin Radio website. So check it out. Check it out.
All right, read it.
Yeah, no, you would enjoy it because it's a grown up piece of work.
Yeah, I'll read it.
All
right, man.
We'll end on this email. Thank you both for thoroughly depressing. We went from uplifting speeches to the dismal situation in Afghanistan, and that dismal situation only to be replicated around the world in this global fight against terrorism. Thanks, boys. Yeah, thanks, Gunner.
Anytime. Anytime.
Hey, it's real. It's real. And so let me tell you, and the worst part is that you're going to have more and more events like happened in New York City coming to the United States because they're not going away. They're not going away. And the only solution is to kill them. They ain't listening. You have to kill them. So anyway, yeah, happy Thanksgiving on that note. So, see you, buddy.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
There you have it, the one and only Michael Musselman here on Almarin Radio. That'll do it. We're 1 minute over. Yeah, new strategy in Afghanistan. It's the old strategy. Another email that I don't have an answer to. Mac, have you seen the reason or what happened to the border agent that was killed yesterday? And the answer to that is no. No, I haven't seen that. The headline got my attention, but I read and I did not see the reason for it. All right, so here's what's going to happen. Tomorrow, Jennifer Carrazzo is going to join us. She is the CEO of the Sugar Bear Foundation, and they do events to support nonprofit organizations. So they are an enabler of enablers. Jennifer is a Gold Star widow. She has a son and a daughter. Her husband, Lieutenant Colonel Mario Carrazzo, was killed in Afghanistan in 2010. So we'll talk to Jennifer. And I'm curious. I want to talk to her about her observations on the stuff that she saw relative to a gold star wife and the president and all of that that played out very publicly. So I'm curious to get her thoughts on that. And then they've been doing some interesting stuff at the Sugar Bear Foundation. So we're going to talk about what they've done, and then they've got an event coming up here in December. So you'll hear from a Gold Star family and a Gold Star mother, Jennifer Carrazzo, always a great and interesting guest. So we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day. This program will repeat itself momentarily. Don't touch that dial. On a Monday, Palmering Radio, over and out.